Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, welcoming to the Disruption Zone, my friend Damon Thayer. He is a state senator, and of course, if you look at it as political rankings, I guess number two, he is the Senate Majority Floor Leader. Senator Thayer, how are you, sir?
Great, Leland. Thanks for having me on your show.
I understand we caught up with you doing what you do when you're not being a legislator, and that's working with horses. I think you're on a horse farm right now, brushing out a horse?
I am. I'm brushing a horse with one hand and holding my phone to talk to you.
All right. With the other. Don't get kicked, okay?
No, I'm not going to get kicked.
So, you know, you guys are out of session now. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you specifically was about the horse industry, because I know that's also what you do when you're not legislating. But I also want to talk about the state of Kentucky right now in terms of our response to COVID-19. It looks like every state around Kentucky is actually getting ready to open back up. We still don't seem to have any finite or strong specific numbers coming from our governor. I thought it was interesting that Governor Beshear chastised Tennessee, saying they were reckless and told Kentuckians not to go there. Meanwhile, Tennessee, with 2.5 million more people, has done much, much better than us, and they were never quite as restrictive. What's your reaction to the way Governor Beshear's been handling all of this?
Well, I want to give him credit on the front end for the way he handled the response. I think he did a good job.
Yeah.
But I've been calling for over 2 weeks now for a gradual re-engagement in our economy. And specifically, we need to reopen the hospitals for these elective procedures. And some of them started back today. As a matter of fact, I was able to go to my chiropractor today. So I'm really relieved about that. And I'm sure a lot of people who use chiropractic services are relieved. But I want all businesses to be reopened in a safe and healthy way. I don't think we need to have the government deciding who's essential and who's not essential.
Right.
We need to figure out who can be safe. And one of those is, of course, our signature industry, the horse industry.
Right.
And I've been calling for Churchill Downs to reopen. They were scheduled to open the barn area in Louisville tomorrow, Tuesday. And that meant that they could reopen for racing in 2 weeks. Now, let's not forget, it is Kentucky Derby week right now.
Right, right.
Normally, we'd be preparing for running the Derby on the first Saturday in May and the Oaks on Friday. And now it's been postponed till Labor Day. But the governor, I'm told, looked at Churchill Downs' very detailed report and said, no, I want you to wait a week. So there are 350 horses ready to come to Kentucky that are stuck in New Orleans along with their people. Matter of fact, there are a lot of people who live in Kentucky 9 months out of the year who go to Florida for the winter. They go to New Orleans for the winter. They go to Arkansas for the winter. And they're ready to come home. And they've been dealing with the protocols down there at those racetracks. And they're ready to come back. I'm told Churchill Downs had a staggered plan to get them back in. The horses from Florida, the horses from Louisiana, the horses from Arkansas. And as of right now, when we're doing this interview, we still don't know when Churchill Downs is going to open. And that means basically the horse industry in Kentucky is at a standstill.
Right.
You've got trainers and jockeys and grooms and everybody who helps support the industry, blacksmiths, veterinarians, feed merchants. They're all at a standstill because the industry is driven by purses, the money that horses compete for and win when they win or run, I think through fifth place. So everything's at a standstill. That's bad because that money then is not trickling down into the economy. And I'm hopeful that it'll be very soon that the governor will let Churchill Downs open up, get these horses shipped back into its barn area and start racing sometime the middle of May.
And the horse industry is a little bit unique too, in that, there's a lot of tracks around the country that are doing races without people in the stands, but those purses can still generate because people bet off track. So
correct.
This is an industry that can mostly function. I mean, maybe 80%. I mean, you still have, you know, you're going to lose your ticket prices and your drinks and food and those kinds of elements of a normal race. But you could be at 60, 70, 80% capacity just having people watch these things on TV, and it would just be just, you just bet off track like so many people do.
Right. They're wagering through what's called advanced deposit wagering, where you have an app on your phone, your device, or your computer where you deposit money in that account and you wager off that account. And that's 70 to 80% of the wagering anyway. So we've got tracks in five states, California, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Florida, that are racing without spectators using these CDC protocols. A racetrack is a very contained facility. And if they can do it in those states, we can do it in Kentucky.
Right.
And we need to be doing it in Kentucky. In order, as you know, Leland, in order for a free market economy to thrive, it requires confidence. It requires confidence. And that means people need to see that their investments are going to pay off. Yeah. It's basically put a freeze on the horse sales here in Lexington, because, you know, people aren't going to invest in horses until they know that their horses have a chance to race and earn some of that money back. It's basically the economic model of horse racing. So we really need to get this thing rolling soon, along with every kind of small business. I think they all ought to be able to come back. Let people choose personal responsibility. And, you know, we're Americans. We can decide, right, you know, whether we want to go out or not and follow the rules. This is going to be a gradual re-engagement. We're going to have to wear masks some places. Some places are going to have reduced capacity. Some sports like racing and probably NASCAR are going to have to run with no spectators. But we can do this, and we need to do this before further damage is done to our economy.
Yeah, I you know, yesterday's two-part episode, which I highly recommend everyone go listen to, which featured the former executive director of the Pegasus Institute, one of the things that came out of that conversation was that our leaders need to be more flexible with the actual data about this virus, as opposed to relying almost exclusively on models that have now failed us. And, you know, we can all go back. I echo your sentiments about Governor Beshear in the moment. You know, I think his heart is to save Kentuckians. I don't question his motives in any way, shape, or form in that sense. I question some of his actions after the fact. But, I mean, at that time, we had to shut everything down because we didn't know what was going on with this. We didn't know if this was, you know, the movie Outbreak or not. But now that we have actual data on the ground, it becomes less and less of an excuse to continue these sort of draconian measures when that data is telling us that we can carefully reopen.
That's right. The hospitals were shut down to create capacity for the COVID-19 patients, most of whom are recovering at home.
Right.
We've got PPE at the hospitals. We've got capacity. There's no reason not to get them back open again. We're better prepared to deal with any spike. Hopefully we don't have one, but we're better prepared to deal with one now than we were 6 to 8 weeks ago. And you know, there's no reason we can't do this. And the whole government picking winners and losers is starting to really get on people's nerves.
Yeah.
Where I live in Georgetown, we have two independently owned flower shops, and they've had to close while two major chain grocery stores remained
right.
open selling
right.
flowers.
Right.
Now, how fair is that? That's just one example. And, you know, I'm a small business owner, and I'm, you know, my parents were small business owners. So I'm really sympathetic to the small business owner, you know, who relies on the cash flow from his or her business operations. People don't have a lot of money set aside.
Right.
They operate off the cash flow. You know, Monday, a week from today, when we're recording this, Toyota in Georgetown is going to reopen.
Yeah.
Now, if Toyota can reopen with 8,000 to 10,000 employees with strict protocols, certainly small businesses with single digit or double digit number of employees can get reopened, because the economic damage that is taking place here is enormous.
Yeah.
And I'm also worried about the resulting mental health results from the stay at home orders and the financial uncertainty.
Yeah.
We've already seen crime numbers go up. I'm concerned about suicides, domestic violence, these sorts of things. And, you know, the longer it goes on, the more financial damage we're going to have, and the more mental health outcomes, negative outcomes we're going to have for the time being.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And just going back to your example, the big box store and the small business, the big box stores being, you know, some of them being open have at least given us a blueprint for how we can, you know, those smaller businesses can now emulate. You know, if you go into a grocery store, they got the dotted lines, you know, stand behind here, separating people 6 feet apart. You know, there's protocols now. We've had time now to be able to check and see what works and what doesn't work. I was in a grocery store the other day. A woman came up to get in line. She got across that red line, and the cashier very politely and kindly said, "Can you wait back there until we're done checking him out?" And she very quickly moved back. The whole thing was very orderly. It was very smooth. Nobody got mad. So we have developed protocols for ways that private businesses can now institute these on their own and say, this is how we're going to keep our patrons at a restaurant 6 feet apart or more, right? We're going to stagger the booths and stagger the tables so that it can at least start getting flow. But I drove past the Lowe's parking lot last night, and I'm telling you, Senator Thayer, there wasn't a lot of social distancing going on there. All of a sudden, everybody's doing home improvement projects, which I can understand, but I was like, you know, small business right next to it, dark.
I've seen the same thing in Georgetown. Yeah. The Lowe's store is always packed. I've been to the Kroger. I've been to the Walmart. I've had to wait outside for 5 minutes to wait for enough people to leave the Kroger so I could go in.
Right.
And it's worked out fine. And, you know, I'm very thankful that these stores were able to stay open.
Yeah.
But we need to let the rest of the businesses reopen and not be concerned with essential versus non-essential and be concerned with what is safe.
Right.
Because every small business and every job is important to this economy, is important to some family, and we need to get it going. And, you know, Governor Beshear joined a compact with states like Ohio and Indiana, but we're not moving as fast as they are.
Right.
And that, I think that's starting to frustrate people.
It's also,
they're getting ahead of us.
Yeah, and it's also going to show, I think, you know, Governor Beshear is going to find out real quick when all those Kentuckians who are not working start to see all their neighbors and next door neighbor states working. Suddenly the Uncle Andy hour is going to go from everybody give accolades to what the hell's going on here. You know, they're going to have to do a lot more soundproofing at the Capitol to keep the protesters from being heard, you know?
I agree. And, you know, we've got an increase in unemployment claims, and we're going to have more people seeking Medicaid assistance. Where does that money come from? That
right.
money comes from businesses being open and paying corporate taxes and their employees working and paying income taxes and then buying items, creating sales tax. So
yeah.
we're a state heavily dependent on income and sales taxes. And that's a problem in this economy that we've got. And we've got one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. It's the highest unemployment rate of any of our surrounding states. So time is of the essence. Again, I don't want to be partisan. It's no secret that Governor Beshear and I are not close. He hasn't talked to the legislature in about 5 or 6 weeks about this, but he is the governor. He won the election, and I support his efforts and the leadership that he's shown, but he needs to be more nimble and be able to multitask and deal with the health and safety issues, but also deal with the other issues like economic and government, the size of government increasing. Those are also big concerns. And I think you can be concerned about all three. You can be concerned about the virus. You can be concerned about the economy. You can be concerned about the growth of government during right. a crisis like this.
Yeah.
I think you can do that with a straight face.
Yeah.
Some people have been critical of me saying, you know, all you care about is money and the economy. I'm like, well, actually, no, I've been following the protocols myself, but we got to get this economy back open or we're going to have more damage to the economy than we've had from the virus itself.
Yeah, I have not been able to wrap my head around the tribalistic. You're either in one camp or the other. You either want to open it all up and the virus is a hoax, which is not true. It's not a hoax. Or you want to, you just want people to die, which is also not true. It is possible to care about both and to see some of the decisions that have been made as overreaching government. Can you clarify, did the governor ever reach out to the legislature for advice, help, and potential ideas on how to deal with this?
No. He spoke to the president of the Senate, Robert Stivers, and the Speaker of the House, David Osborne, at the very beginning. He wanted us to adjourn the session and go home. which we have a constitutional responsibility as a co-equal branch of government, the people's branch of government. We had a responsibility to stay in and finish the budget by April 15th. We made him an offer. We said, look, we'll adjourn this session right now, but you got to call us back into a special session tomorrow, which we will recess until things are better and we'll come back and do the budget. And he refused to do it. So he basically forced our hand to stay in session. We had to, in order to be able to stay and run a legislative session during the peak of the virus, we had to institute very serious protocols. I mean, we kicked out all of our interns, a lot of our staff, all of our pages, all of our guests, all the lobbyists, et cetera, et cetera. And we ran the session at the very end with a limited staff and had to get through passing all of the budget bills, which is the most stressful time of the budget. During the middle of this thing, and we got it done. We got it done in time to override a bunch of his vetoes, and state government won't shut down on July 1. We passed some bills to actually codify some of his executive orders. We passed some bills to help with the relief efforts, to help extend some of the unemployment benefits. So I stand by our decision to stay in, but he hasn't talked to any of us since then. And I talked to some of my legislative friends in other states, and they're meeting with governors on a weekly basis and giving ideas and input and presenting plans. But I'm not being partisan. You asked me a question. I'm giving you a factual answer. The answer is no.
Well, it's just doesn't matter what party they belong to. It's the best way for him to stay in touch with the constituents. You know, I mean, it's one thing to speak to the media at 5 o'clock every day. It's another thing to hear from Pikeville. It's another thing to hear from Inez. You know what I mean? I mean, what's going on in those people's lives? What's going on with those businesses? It just seems like if you could get those state legislators in your office or on the phone for a minute or two, you could be like more in touch with what Kentuckians are dealing with.
Every representative represents about 43,000 people. The Senate members, we each represent about 115,000 people, except for my district, which is growing rapidly. I probably represent about 130,000 people. We're their voice.
Right.
We're their voice, and the governor should listen to us because we are the representatives who reflect their opinion. And what, you know, the things I'm hearing the most are, hey, I'm having trouble with my unemployment claim, and please get this economy back open again. Right. Those are the things we're hearing. And I talked to my fellow members, and they're saying the same thing.
Wow. Does the office of governor in Kentucky have too much power?
Well, we are a strong governor state. Remember, the legislature is part-time. We only meet for 30 days an odd number of years, 60 days an even number of years. And it is set up to be a strong governor state, especially when the legislature isn't in session. We started trying to reel in some of those executive branch powers, even when a member of our own party, Matt Bevin, was governor. But I think now during this crisis, you can see that the governor is ultra-powerful and doesn't have to seek any input from the legislative branch. And it might take a constitutional change, Leland, but there are probably some statutory things we can do to try to reel in some of that power. And there's already talk about doing that. There's nothing like a crisis to bring a magnifying glass to the fact that the executive branch probably has too much power. Because remember, constitutionally, we are a co-equal branch of government with the judicial branch and the executive branch.
Right.
It's the balance of power, though, is out of whack right now.
Yeah.
Yes, I would answer your question. Yes, I think the governor probably has too much power and probably should. In Louisiana, for example, they have an emergency preparedness committee that meets when the legislature is out of session to deal with any sort of disasters, tornadoes, floods, hurricanes, things like that. And they're meeting right now, and they are representing their members in discussions with the executive branch about what to do. They're having input into how they're going to run their elections.
Right.
So I think those are some of the questions we need to start asking ourselves as we move out of this crisis and move gradually back into normalcy.
Well, and I agree that, you need a strong leader in a time of emergency. They have to be able to act quickly. You know, I understand that. America's got a long tradition of that. You know, it's what the
Absolutely.
Executive does. But it does seem like maybe a great idea going forward would be that if we were in a situation like this, some sort of statewide or national emergency, that there was a virtual way that the legislature could sort of do kind of an ad hoc session so that they could provide advisory and consent to the governor. not necessarily impeding every action that he takes, but, you know, like when he sent the state police to churches to write down license plates, you know, I mean, that was an overreach. And it would have been nice to have some advice and consent on something that was that big of a deal.
I totally agree. And like you said, advise and consent. That's a good rule for the legislature to have when we're not in session. And I think you'll see us take a look at that. The issue is we're probably limited in the statutory changes we could make, but right. So it might require a constitutional amendment that the people would vote on.
Right.
The good news on that is it doesn't require the signature of the governor. We just need to get a 3/5 supermajority in the House and the Senate. The Secretary of State authorizes it, and then it goes on the ballot in the fall.
Yeah. Well, that could definitely be a way to go about it. Let's talk about. I want to circle back in just a few minutes to the horse industry and some of the industries that are tied into that and what they mean to Kentucky's economy. But back to the small business side of things, how do you think it ought to look in terms of gradual reopening? What would that look like to you?
Here's what it would look like to me. Next week, Churchill Downs opens its barn areas at Derby City Gaming and at Churchill Downs itself. Then they would begin to stagger shipments of horses in from training centers and Turfway Park in Kentucky, racetracks and training centers in Florida, the racetrack in New Orleans, and the racetrack in Hot Springs, Arkansas. You'd probably stagger them in because you're going to have to put people through tests, temperature checks, get them set up with the proper protocols that are in place everywhere else, get these horses in, let them start training on the track, and then probably 2 weeks later, like 3 weeks from right now, you open up for live racing with no spectators. The races are available on TVG, and you can wager via an advanced deposit wagering app. By the way, because of the lack of live sports, horse racing is on 3 national networks every weekend, live on TVG, Fox Sports 1, and NBC Sports Network. And then, you know, so you would open up with no spectators doing these protocols. And then based on how things go, maybe you start looking to mid-June where you could start letting spectators in.
Yeah.
Or start letting owners and horse owners and their entourages to come back to the races to watch their horses run, and maybe a limited crowd. And then you just kind of keep advancing forward. And as we continue to meet certain thresholds, let more people in so we can get back to normal. I think we, as a people, understand we're going to have to follow these protocols for a time to be determined. But that's what I would do. I'm not in charge, but that's, you know, I used to work at racetracks. I do sports marketing in the horse racing business for clients outside of Kentucky. And that's the kind of advice I would give.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm just looking at an article in Newsweek right now that we need to develop herd immunity. And that means that, in my opinion, the way we reopen society or the economy is that we keep the elderly and immunocompromised home, probably through the summer. But we let young, healthy people, and there's some really interesting numbers out now, Senator Thayer. Yesterday I saw a poll, or not a poll, but actual numbers where they tested 3,000 strong prison population, and there was like a large number of them that had tested positive for COVID-19, and 96% of those that tested positive had zero symptoms. And we're seeing those kinds of numbers pop out. A Stanford doctor said the same thing in California. We saw today that Governor Cuomo of New York thinks that 25% of New Yorkers have had the virus and gotten over it and probably didn't even know they had it. So herd immunity is developing. And in fact, the Newsweek article that I just looked at, everybody's been criticizing Sweden. They didn't shut their entire economy down. Now the Sweden's U.S. ambassadors come out and said, hey, Stockholm's close to coronavirus herd immunity. So there's an element of this where we have to protect the vulnerable, but we also have to there's a little bit of a risk we have to take here where the young and the healthy can get back to business. And that's the best way to protect those vulnerable is if we all have herd immunity, they have a less chance of getting it when they do come out of their homes. So I think, to me, that's an important aspect of it. And eventually allowing spectators back into events is going to have to happen.
I agree with you, Leland. And I've read about what happened in Sweden. They didn't even close down their schools.
No.
And I agree, you know, and by the way, a lot of the COVID cases are coming from jails and nursing homes.
Right.
But I agree with you. Continue to quarantine the sick and the elderly and those in the at-risk population who maybe have underlying conditions. Quarantine them for a little while longer and let the rest of us who are in the healthy population make our own decision as to when we will go out. I think I'm going to be one of the – I'm a doer. I mean, I've already missed the entire Kima meet. I missed the Elton John concert. I missed the three-day event. I'm going to miss the Oaks and the Derby. I'm a guy who buys a lot of sports and concert tickets, and I'm a doer. And as soon as this thing's over, I'm going to be among the first to go back to restaurants and movie theaters and
right.
hope that my concerts aren't canceled this summer, go back to the races, go back to sports events. Then I think there'll be another group of people who will be like, well, I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach. I'm not going to be in the first wave. And then there'll be a third group of people in that healthy population who might decide to stay at home for a while.
Right.
And that's fine. And that's how you develop herd immunity, get this thing going gradually, and let people make their own decisions. Personal responsibility is what our republic is based on.
Right.
And I support that. And I think that we can do it and hopefully avoid a spike and stay healthy and safe.
One thing I'm concerned about in reopening businesses is liability. And yesterday I sent a flurry of texts to my friends in the legislature. You were one of them. And I was like, how can we protect small businesses from liability as they open back up? Because we are a litigious society. I want to be very clear in this. I am not for shielding companies from liability most of the time. And one Democrat legislator that I was chatting with yesterday, we both agreed. It was like, normally we're not for this, but in a special circumstance with something specifically written, that would be good. But we can't do that right now because the legislature in this period is not able to contribute, correct?
That's right. We're not scheduled to go back into session until January, but I have heard those concerns about liability, and that's something we're going to have to take a look at. And another thing that I've been asked about is insurance policies have no issues relating to protecting businesses from a pandemic, and that's something else we're probably going to need to look at. So those are really good points.
Since you guys can't do it because you're not in session. We don't have that sort of ad hoc session possibility right now because the governor has the power.
I doubt that Governor Beshear is going to call us into special session. I really do.
Especially if he
doesn't like it when we're he doesn't like it when we're there.
Well, I was going to say, especially if he wasn't interested in your opinion before now, I'm not sure he's going to want to do it now. But what about, could we somehow put some, maybe do this federally? Could we roll this uphill, you know? Is there a way to roll this uphill? I guess we'd have to talk to Congress members in Washington or whatever, but it seems to me it would be a good idea to put some sort of temporary shield in place for very specific types of protections and liability.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and probably that's the place to start.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be an issue. It's not just an issue in one state. It's an issue
right.
in all of them.
Okay, real quick now, the horse industry is a huge part of Kentucky. Tied to the horse industry's fortunes is also partly, our liquor industry. You know, our bourbon is basically for the most part
bourbon, small farm wineries, craft breweries,
and they're tied in because they get a huge marketing boost from Derby Week. I mean, that is massive marketing for them.
It this week is normally the biggest bourbon, craft brewery, small farm winery tourist week.
Wow.
This is when they get their highest number of visitors. And I mean, they're flat on their backs because all the tourism locations are shut down. They're still able to produce beer, wine, and bourbon, which is great.
Right.
Because especially for those of us who are bourbon aficionados, 4, 5, and 6 years from now, we don't want to have a shortage of bourbon, right?
Right.
They are making hand sanitizer at a lot of these places, but they're still making bourbon, but their tourism is shut down completely. So we need to get that back going too. And they're probably going to have some protocols in place too, but we need to get that going. And they're missing out on their biggest time of the year. The second biggest time of the year for them is during the Keeneland meet in October. So they've missed Derby Week and the Keeneland spring meet at 4 really huge weeks.
Right.
So they're, and you're right. They are interconnected to the horse industry. People come here to go to the races, go to horse sales, and they visit bourbon. They visit all tourism facilities, to be honest with you.
Right.
State parks and restaurants and museums. But you know, by and large, they spend a lot of time at these bourbon tourism locations that continue to grow, as well as the craft distilleries and small farm wineries. These places have big followings.
What's your optimism level that we'll get through this and how long it might take?
I have no inside information on this, but I'm hoping that we can be reasonably on our way to a gradual reopening by the middle of May. And that I hope that's the case. I speak for my constituents when I say that, but it's not up to me. I just hope that the governor, you know, allows us to do that. And it brings us back to the question, should one man really have this much power?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
But I'm hoping the middle of May, and that by Memorial Day, you know, there's a normalization. And, you know, maybe I'm always a glass half full guy. I might be too optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think we'll ever go back to that normal that we knew 12 weeks ago. But yeah.
Oh yeah, there are going to be some permanent changes, and you know, just like there were after 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, permanent changes that we become accustomed to.
Right. But how long do you think economically it's going to take to recover, state and nationally?
I'm not an economist, and you know, I would love to have a V-shaped recovery, but it looks like it could be more of the longer we go, you know, the more likely we're going to have what those economists call the U-shaped recovery.
Yeah, a long U.
And it depends. I'm a big believer in pent-up demand.
Right.
And how quickly people want to re-engage. But I think, like I said earlier, people are going to re-engage in phases. There'll be some of us who are enthusiastic re-engagers, some who are reluctant, and some who are going to just say, well, I'm going to stay inside for a while.
Right. Right. Good point. Listen, it's great talking to you. I'll let you get back to brushing your horses. Appreciate your time. And hopefully we'll make it through soon, and you know, calm heads will prevail, and we'll get that V-shaped recovery. I don't know if that's possible, but hopefully that's what we'll get. Thanks for talking with us.
I hope so. It's great, as always, being on your show, Leland. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. State Senator Damon Thayer, he is the number two in the Senate. He's the House Majority Floor Leader. And just wanted to get his take on it because of his connections to the horse industry, and that's such a vital part of Kentucky's economy. But also his leadership in the Senate. And I think the most astounding thing that we got from this episode was when I went back and asked him point blank, has the governor talked to you guys at all about ideas and ways to get through this? And the answer was a definitive no. It tells you a lot about Governor Andy Beshear's leadership, in my opinion. So anyway, we've got lots more to come. We're going to actually check in with a lawyer this week about the liability issue, because I think that's a very interesting thing. And then Cameron's going to come on. Cameron Mills, my co-host, will be back on with us as well. Thanks for listening. If you want to help me out, expand our voice, you know, get your friends to sign up and subscribe. It's a free subscription on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio's app. Just go to iHeartRadio's app and just search The Disruption Zone, and you can have me and my wonderful guests delivered straight to your pocket. You can find us on Instagram. It's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. And on Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption, because some jackwagon took Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. I am Leland Conway. Oh, and a big thank you to Dynamics Productions in Lexington. They provide the music for this show. You've been listening to The Disruption Zone.